Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, when I told you not to fill your letters with rubbish about the war, I meant, of course, that I did not want to have your rather infantile rhapsodies about the death of men and the destruction of cities. Insofar as the war really concerns the spiritual state of the patient, I naturally want full reports. And on this aspect you seem singularly obtuse. Thus, you tell me with glee that there is reason to expect heavy air raids on the town where the creature lives. This is a crying example of something I have complained about already. Your readiness to forget the main point in your immediate enjoyment of human suffering. Do you not know that bombs kill men? Or do you not realize that the patient's death at this moment is precisely what we want to avoid? He has escaped the worldly friends with whom you tried to entangle him. He has fallen in love with a very Christian woman and is temporarily immune from your attacks on his chastity. And the various methods of corrupting his spiritual life, which we have been trying, are so far unsuccessful at the present moment. As the full impact of the war draws nearer and his worldly hopes take a proportionately lower place in his mind, full of his defense work, full of the girl, forced to attend to his neighbors more than he has ever done before, and liking it more than he expected, taken out of himself, as the humans say, and daily increasing in conscious dependence on the enemy, he will almost certainly be lost to us if he is killed tonight. This is so obvious I am ashamed to write it. I sometimes wonder if you young fiends are not kept out on temptation duty too long at a time. If you are not in some danger of becoming infected by the sentiments and values of the humans among whom you work. They, of course, do tend to regard death as the prime evil and survival as the greatest good. But that is because we have taught them to do so. Do not let us be infected by our own propaganda. I know it seems strange that your chief aim at the moment should be the very same thing for which the patient's lover and his mother are praying, namely his bodily safety. But so it is. You should be guarding him like the apple of your eye. If he dies now, you lose him. If he survives the war, there is always hope. The enemy has guarded him from you through the first great wave of temptations, but if only he can be kept alive, you will have time itself for your ally. The long, dull, monotonous years of middle-aged prosperity or middle-aged adversity are excellent campaigning weather. You see, it is so hard for these creatures to persevere. The routine of adversity, the gradual decay of youthful loves and youthful hopes, the quiet despair, hardly felt as pain, of ever overcoming the chronic temptations with which we have again and again defeated them, the drabness which we create in their lives, and the inarticulate resentment with which we teach them to respond to it, all this provides admirable opportunities of wearing out a soul by attrition. If, on the other hand, the middle years prove prosperous, our position is even stronger. Prosperity knits a man to the world. He feels that he is finding his place in it. Well, really, it is finding its place in him. His increasing reputation, his widening circle of acquaintances, his sense of importance, the growing pressure of absorbing an agreeable work, build up in him a sense of being really at home on earth, which is just what we want. You will notice that the young are generally less unwilling to die than the middle-aged and the old. The truth is that the enemy, having oddly destined these mere animals to life in his own eternal world, has guarded them pretty effectively from the danger of feeling at home anywhere else. That is why we must often wish long life to our patients. 70 years is not a day too much for the difficult task of unraveling their souls from heaven and building up a firm attachment to the earth. While they are young, we find them always shooting off at a tangent. Even if we contrive to keep them ignorant of explicit religion, the incalculable winds of fantasy and music and poetry, the mere face of a girl, the song of a bird, the sight of a horizon are always blowing our whole structure away. They will not apply themselves steadily to worldly advancement, prudent connections, and the policy of safety first. So inveterate is their appetite for heaven that our best method at this stage of attaching them to the earth is to make them believe that earth can be turned into heaven at some future date by politics or eugenics or science or psychology or whatnot. Real worldliness is a work of time, assisted, of course, by pride. For we teach them to describe the creeping death as good sense, or maturity, or experience. Experience! In the peculiar sense we teach them to give it is, by the by, a most useful word. A great human philosopher nearly let our secret out when he said that where virtue is concerned, experience is the mother of illusion. But thanks to a change in fashion, and also, of course, to the historical point of view, we have largely rendered his book innocuous. How valuable time is to us may be gauged by the fact that the enemy allows us so little of it. The majority of the human race dies in infancy. Of the survivors, a good many die in youth. It is obvious that to him, human birth is important chiefly as the qualification for human death, and death solely as the gate to that other kind of life. We are allowed to work only on a selected minority of the race, for what humans call a normal life is the exception. Apparently he wants some, but only very few, of the human animals with which he is peopling heaven to have had the experience of resisting us through an earthly life of 60 or 70 years. Well, that is our opportunity. The smaller it is, the better we must use it. Whatever you do, keep your patient as safe as you possibly can. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
All right, well, here we are back at it. Screwtape Letters Podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Times. Letter number 28. Thought occurs to me right off the bat, Ian. It's almost that concept of you're only as good as your last day. Yeah. Finishing the race strong is more important than how you run any other part of the race. And Screwtape seems to be nailing that point home in a number of different ways to Wormwood in this letter.
Isn't it funny as well where even before C.S. Lewis, the idea of making sure people had a relationship with Christ before they died probably goes back to Christ itself, that has always been the case, that it, like, die with Christ at your side. And the way C.S. Lewis has turned the idea of, okay, one, what's life all about? Two, my big question, I think I've named this in another letter, like, why did God do all this? And that big why is the big question. And then if he did, and this is what we can't take our own life, right? So it's not like I have a great relationship with Jesus Christ. If I take it now, I get to be there. Good. God numbers your days, and it's for him to decide when that last day is. Mm-hmm. We don't get to decide that. Life's precious, like we said before, from conception to death. Like, that's God's choice. But right. Having that walk with Jesus Christ and having that relationship during that is what's really important. And C.S. Lewis talks in here, and if I was to phrase the letter, Galen, it would be death and the spiritual life. And it's all about what happens in and amongst that.
Right.
So let's look at the letter real quick, kind of right at the beginning. The tone of the letter is he's kind of rebuking Wormwood, because Wormwood seems to be encouraged by the fact that, you know, this guy might die at war. But he's completely oblivious to the fact that, you know what, though, this kid is living a decent spiritual life. And there's a couple things that he points out. First of all, he's got a good girlfriend. He's kind of walking for the Lord. He seems to be in the enemy's camp. If he were to die today, he's lost forever. And the purpose of the demonic and Satan is to pull people away from God in this life and ultimately for all of eternity. Wormwood doesn't seem to realize that this kid, if he were to die today, would probably enter into glory, and he's lost forever.
And they also point out, right, in there, that the idea of death has to be rethought. Because, like they said, the longer we live and the more experiences we have, death all of a sudden becomes a super negative.
Right.
Where ultimately, it's something none of us can get around. You're going to, if you live, you die. Otherwise, you are a rock.
Right.
So at some point, where is the value in that life? And for me, it's the relationship with Jesus Christ that provides you with that salvation. If you're a believer, it can be nothing but that. And again, you don't take your own life, but you live every day. And like what's that Bible verse, Galen, where it talks about preparing for, is it the watchman or, I can't think of it, that you don't know when that day will be. It's like, it comes like a thief in the night.
Right. No man knows the day or the hour, you know, ultimately talking about Christ's return. But Jesus says in the parable, at this night, your life may be required of you. You know, for all you know, you never know when that day is going to be coming. Any of us could be gone in an instant.
Yeah. So if you look at this from Screwtape's point of view, where the demonic want us to live for long enough so they can corrupt us.
Right.
That also gets me thinking about how, when you look at the music industry, you get so many people who are non-religious, who die terrible deaths early on, suicides, overdoses. They have no relationship with Jesus Christ. And then the line in this, which is around, he's talking about, like, if he gets bombed, he may die and we may lose him at a time.
Do you not know that bombs kill men?
Right. So it makes you think, right? Does the demonic have even more of a target on you when you're in a season of not walking with Christ? Because for them, there's their victory.
It's like cashing out while you're ahead. Whereas when this guy's walking with Christ, they want the game to continue. I mean, because it's true. You look at it, war, especially the war that is referenced throughout Screwtape Letters, there is a lot of, you know, joy that comes to the demonic realm, because they love to see human suffering and they love to see all the people dying that probably aren't walking with the Lord. So the demonic can win either way. But in this case, they want you to live life long enough to be able to pull you away, which he talks in the letter about how they have an ability to do that, especially through middle age and into old age, because your affections can be continually knit to this world. And I find it interesting because he says, I want to mention a line, because there's two things. Not just is this guy walking with the Lord, so if he dies now, he might go to heaven and you're going to lose your patience. But he says the worldly hopes that your patient has experienced takes a proportionally lower place in his mind, full of his defense work, full of a girl, forced to attend to his neighbors more than he has ever done before, and liking it more than he expected. He's taken out of himself. Part of it is the war is causing a lot of human suffering, which is a terrible thing. But the result among God's people in this case is he's starting to value the things that really matter in life. His mind isn't caught up in this world because he's living during a suffering time.
Right.
And he's not just walking with the Lord, but his whole mindset is just, you know, he has more goodwill towards his neighbor. He's appreciating this romantic relationship that he's pursuing. He's actually genuinely able to authentically appreciate the good things in life because of the suffering that comes from the war. And Screwtape is pointing out, you need time to like get the war over with, get him, here comes that word again, get him fuddled up with the normal mundane things of life, so that he thinks he's gaining more of the world, but really the world is going to ultimately gain more of him, because that's what happens over the course of time.
And that's brilliant, the way C.S. Lewis puts that line, where they're trying to escape the world, but yeah, the world actually has got a grip on them, and it changes right. them. You see with so many people who, and you've obviously these stories around people who are up for execution. I think Thomas More had a great line about the test of faith when he was going to be beheaded. And then you also think about the way soldiers talk about the change it is in them when they're in conflict, where this could be my last day. And all of a sudden, what's valuable in life to them changes. So they go through that real sense of taking a life audit on who am I, what's this all been worth, and you know, what's going to happen to me when I die. And it's really interesting because he talks about how this line around it's so hard for humans to persevere because within despair, it's wearing out a soul by attrition. And so the longer you actually live a spiritual life, and this is, I think, something that I see in people in my men's group, some of the older guys, like the attacks don't stop. And it's like, of course they don't. Because that's what they want. They want you, and God's given you these extra years to live and be an influence to people, to be a guide to the younger people. And of course, they're not going to stop the attacks on you because you're now actually even warring more against them by influencing the younger people to have a relationship with Jesus Christ at a time where they may be like, I've got football and I've got the girls and I've got the world and I've got my job and I'm invincible and nothing can ever happen to me. Why do I need God for? And then here's these men and women who are influencing them and alerting them to life, what it's all about, the attacks that are going to take place, and how to resist the demonic that is constantly on you.
Right. And I do think also there's something that, there is something about life where, you could unpack the phenomenon of like the midlife crisis, because it does get a little bit difficult as time goes on. He talks in here about like almost the monotony of life, the long, dull, monotonous years of middle age prosperity or middle age adversity, our excellent campaigning weather. So it's like the long, dull, monotonous years, where it's either you're struggling through life or you're prospering through life. Either way, there can be a level of monotony of it. And it really does require perseverance to continue your walk with the Lord, to continue finding your identity in Jesus and finding joy in the Lord through every season, the ups and downs, and use the word undulation again.
Yeah, I don't want to go on to this in a sec. Yeah.
Yeah. And because life has that. I mean, let's just talk really about, as guys, life sometimes is a little bit difficult. I'm going through, season right now. It's a great season. We got a lot of good things going on and everything, but still, we got two kids that are littles, we're not sleeping very much. I'm working around the clock. It's like, I have to be intentional about finding joy in it all and finding, also things like finding time to make sure I still have a date night with my wife, because it's very easy to fall into the monotony of like that middle age life. And those years can be a very slow fade kind of away from your first love of walk with the Lord. And it takes a lot of intentionality to do that. And the demonic, they've got your whole life planned from start to finish. They're going to always play the long game to find out how they can pull you away You know, if they can't get you now in the next year or two, how can they get you by the time you're 65, 70, 75 years old?
So this letter ties together for me a lot of thoughts from a lot of other letters. You mentioned the law of undulation, which is an amazing concept to take. Life isn't linear. It isn't all up times. It is going to undulate. And then it's, okay, how do you react within those times? Some of us, when that we're on those troughs, we'll pray hard, Lord, why is this happening? Jesus, please help me. I need your help. Mm-hmm. I need, Lord, please, Lord, please. Then on the up times, they don't go to church. Life's great. I've got all these things going on. I've got my friends. I've got this. I've got that. I've got the other. And then the trough happens again, and they're like, Lord, please, why is this happening to me? Now, if you're sitting in God's shoes, or if you're sitting in another person's shoes, that this was a friend and they said, what do you think? You probably respond to them, you're kind of selfish and you're kind of a lot about you. You're not very thankful of the good times. Shouldn't right. you be on your knees during the good times, thanking God mm. for the amazing times? Mm. And so- look, a lot of us do. I felt guilty to this in the past. Where it's, oh, life's so busy. I haven't got time for church. So I'll go when I've got time. Rather than prioritizing it, right, Galen?
Totally.
And I even say to people, when life is great for you, show up at church. And when people ask you how life is, tell them how great it is because of your relationship with Jesus Christ that got you to this great spot.
Right. Because you can have a positive influence in somebody else's life. Maybe someone else is going through a trough season, and you can be an encouragement to them. You know,
exactly.
A proverb comes to mind, and it's been a proverb that's been on my mind and heart a lot this year, and you know, over the past year. I don't know the reference off the top of my head, but it says, "Lord," basically a prayer in Proverbs, and it basically says, "May I not be so poor." Or that I never not be wanting so much that I end up being dishonest or stealing so that I defame the name of the Lord and I make my God look bad. And let me not be so wealthy that I turn around and I go, who even is the Lord? Who needs the Lord? Life is great. You know, I've turned my back on the Lord. And it's that same law of however things are going in life, don't let the circumstances that you're in pull you away from your walk with the Lord, whether it's a trough season, whether it's a peak season, and know that life is going to have a lot of them. And through every dip, you can either get closer and drive closer to the Lord or be slowly, slowly pulled away. And I think what we're seeing in this letter is through the undulation, the demonic is using every cycle to try to pull people into an outer ring and an outer ring and an outer ring. And it's, I think it's just something to be aware of and mindful of as we're going through those ups and downs.
So I'm going to have a dramatic pause here for a second while I throw this out. Because I wrote this down when I was taking my notes. So dramatic pause. Does a walk with Christ produce a longer life? And I wrote that down because I thought to myself, if the spiritual warfare that I believe is going on, it's started in Genesis and it's still happening. And what this letter purports to say along the lines of, and it's very clever and very astute, is that why would the devil want to take you when he knows that you just now have a place with the Lord? They're going to want to take you when the victory is theirs, where the soul is theirs.
Mm.
Am I being a heretic a little bit with that question, Galen? I know it's loaded, hence the dramatic pause, but sure. Does a walk with Christ produce a longer life?
You know, I think if we're talking demonic strategy, I think perhaps. I don't know if I would say that's a hard and fast rule, but I think the observation and the thought is pretty profound. You know, you do... If the demonic wants to hold out hope to still pull you away, because that's exactly what's happening in this letter.
Right.
This, you know, he's encouraging the wormwood to whatever extent wormwood has the ability to, you know, impact the taking of this man's life in one way or another. Screwtape is telling him, don't root for that, you fool. let him live out his day. So in this case, in the case of this letter in any way, this young boy's walk with the Lord is extending his days.
So here's a challenge then, right? We've got an amazing listenership out there who sometimes send us the most incredible notes. If there's anyone out there who's seen a study on that, is there any empirical evidence that Christian people or people who walk with faith live a longer life? I'd love to know that, because the studies on does prayer work, they've done that. They did that at Duke University. I'm sure someone has looked at statistics and said, you know, does a Christian life lead to a longer life?
That's a great question. It's a great question. So I'm not seeing the studies. Be curious to see what people say.
So there's another great line in here as well. And when you actually read these lines, it makes you think of a triangle. And at the zenith of the triangle is someone who lives a long life. And the lines are this: the majority of the human race dies in infancy. We can probably add on in these days, Galen, aborted in the womb as well, right?
Right, right.
Of the survivors, a great many die in youth. And obviously that's talking about, you know, if you go back 120 years, infant mortality was huge.
Right.
They were pasteurization changed that in a big way. It was one of the biggest changes of it. But again, medicine, health, all changed that for the better. And so more people are living. And he says, birth is chiefly the qualification for human death, which then makes sense, because if you're born and you live, you have to die. And that has to happen. Again, God numbers your days, so that's going to happen. And death, solely the gateway to that other kind of life.
Mm.
So unless you're an atheist or you're a non-believer, death is a gateway to another kind of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, even if you're an atheist and an unbeliever, death is a gateway to a whole nother type of life.
Just not the one they were hoping for or thinking about.
But it's a true and powerful and sobering statement, isn't it?
It really is. And the funny part, he says, for those who survive, Screwtape says, only a select few will resist us.
And his point there, resist us all through their days, all the way up to the end of all the people who, you know, can live an entirety of a human life. Only a handful, there's a doctrine. There's a doctrine in Christian theology called perseverance of the saints. And if you get into the Calvinist stuff, wherever you are on the spectrum of Calvinism or Arminianism, the thought and the principle is true that persevering all the way to the end and remaining in Christ all the way to your last day is really a thing to require. That's required to really, I would say, prove salvation and demonstrate that your salvation is real and genuine. But it is something that is more, it's easier said than done, you know, because even the demonic are pointing out so few do it. It seems to be a select minority of people who truly are able to live that life.
No, I say this letter, when I first read it, like so many in here, I sat for a second and said, okay, where's he going with this? And I'm so glad we're unpacking it, because I know so many people who love the Screwtape letters. And I've talked to people who've said, I never really got what they were talking about. And I've listened to your podcast and I didn't even read that into it. Then I read it back and went, wow. And then there's so much more. And we've talked, Galen, before about how we could probably go over these letters a whole other time and cover a ton of stuff that we never even covered in each of the letters anyway.
Right. Totally could. Totally.
Now, there's a line in there here where he actually says as well, one of the authors nearly gave away our secret. And he said, where virtue is concerned, experience is the mother of illusion. And that's obviously talking about like life experiences. My question for you is he talking about life as a virtue? Or is he talking about...
I think what his point is, if we're talking about different virtues, I think he's saying experience is thought of as a virtue.
That's what I think it is. Yeah.
And so experience is the virtue in question. And what one author, philosopher, pointed out at some point in the course of human history, someone stumbled on the idea that, you know, experience, it's kind of a little bit of a trap. It's that same concept we talked about maybe in the last letter, or the letter before, about that chronological snobbery. A lot of times we think because we've got a lot of life experience, you know, we've kind of arrived and we're a lot wiser. And it's actually not true. Sometimes you can go in life, and this is the whole point of this letter. The demonic is hoping that the further you get into life, they can actually pull you away or galvanize you in the things of the world. Because your experience does not mean you're necessarily wise. And what's the exact line that he says there? I underlined that too. Yeah, he says experience is the mother of illusion.
Right.
The illusion that I'm wise, the illusion that I'm getting insightful and truthful and accurate. You know, it's like, it's not the case with everyone. And the demonic is banking on it. So I think it's a good challenge to middle-aged guys, older age guys. Don't just assume because we're advancing in years and gaining life experience that we're getting closer to the Lord. That's why the whole point of this podcast is to confront evil in our times so that we can all strengthen our walks with Jesus, because it doesn't happen automatically.
And to that point, confronting evil in our time doesn't mean at any, it doesn't mean of a certain age. It's at any age. You can be a young boy, an older woman, a middle-aged man, whatever it is. It's at any of those times. So, you know, that virtue, where virtue is concerned, experience is the mother of illusion, was in a book called The Critique of Pure Reason by Immanuel Kant. I wanted to look that up because I thought it was amazing how he sort of threw that in there. Don't know much about the author. If anyone has more information on that, we'd love to know. But yeah, the more I read up on it, it's kind of a deep book. So it's maybe one I'm going to have to put in my library and actually spend a bit of time reading that as well, because it seems pretty amazing. So yeah, this letter, Death and Spiritual Life, it once you get into this and start really thinking around that idea of, you know, yes, your days are numbered. Have you got that right relationship? Is the demonic winning? Are you prepared to let the demonic win? Are you going to be one of those that says, nah, I know better because I've seen empirical? I had this situation, Galen, with a friend whose mother was told by the doctors she had 3 days to live and is now 3 weeks out of the hospital in an assisted living home. Now, either science is wrong or the prayer groups that helped her have something to do with this.
Right.
And we talked about prayer. Totally believe, you know, Jesus is a healer. You pray in Jesus' name for healing, especially in a larger group, very specifically it happens. So this letter just brings all this together, especially with the ultimate question we all ask, which is, okay, why are we here? What are we here for? And what do I, as a believer in Christ, where do I have to get to myself to? It isn't works. It is grace, but it's also, I think, that relationship where you become a sincere believer who is actually helping others to see their way with Christ as well.
Mm. You know, one last thought I have on this episode is, as we're talking through this, it makes me remember my college years. Late 30s at this point. So college was a long time ago, but I went to a Bible college. A lot of people were studying to get into ministry. A great little university, really phenomenal spot. But I looked at a lot of the guys that I went to school with. You know, we were in the classes, a lot of people aspiring to be pastors, aspiring to be preachers and all these things. And as I look at a lot of these guys now, you know, now we're approaching, you know, full-fledged middle age at this point. The percentage of them that are no longer walking with the Lord, the percentage of them that have, whether they left ministry and got a secular job, which is fine and great, but then that also amounted to them kind of wandering away from the Lord. I think it's a thing in the ministry. A lot of times people that are pursuing the pastorate let their vocation be the expression of their faith, and that's not a good thing. But how many of those guys that were on fire for the Lord in college years that have now completely turned their backs and walked away from the Lord, because it is a thing that happens over time. And I think that's the illustration and point of this letter, maintaining a walk through the years. And I would even ask you, like, you're a few years ahead of me in life. What would be your advice to somebody who's maybe been on fire for the Lord in their younger years, and then life happens, you get kids going off to college, you're tired, you get caught up in a million other things. How do you keep the candle burning and not allow life to get in the way?
I think that's a great question, because looking back, thank the Lord for being a forgiving God. I think that would be the first thing I say. It's never too late. If you're listening to this podcast and you've had a relationship with Christ and walked away, get on your knees and get back. Because I think that that relationship in everything you do, regardless of the business, if you're a bakery or working on an oil rig somewhere, you can have a relationship with Jesus Christ and carry that through. I try and pray every day before I start work for God to guide me in the work I do. I pray with others. I pray for healing. And it doesn't get old. A friend of mine said the other night, he goes, "I'm sorry to always be asking for prayers." I'm like, "You don't text me enough." It's like, I absolutely love praying with people, because I can see the incremental change it has in their life, Galen. So I think to answer that question, I think it's make it a 7-day Christian life. Sunday can be your big day with church, or whether it's Saturday, or spend time with your family, or praying with your family. But on those other days, don't put Jesus to the side.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you do. I would bet money now you're praying before opening every day.
We launch every one of our weekends with a word of prayer. Yeah. We launched our grand opening with a word of prayer, for sure.
Yeah. Like, God wants to bless the things that we do. So yeah, for everyone, take the time, do that, make sure that, put Jesus at the center of everything, and just watch the blessings that come with that. And make sure the blessings over your family, over everything that you're thankful for, the friends, relationships, everything. And you'll all of a sudden be living a much richer life as well. So for letter 28, it's a real doozy. We'd love to hear from our listeners on this. The Screwtape Letters podcast, Confronting Evil in Our Time. For everyone listening, next week's going to be a special Thanksgiving episode, so look out for that. And we wish you all in advance a really happy Thanksgiving. Spend great time with your family and friends. Till next time, we'll speak to you again on the Screwtape Letters podcast.